The Holy Gospel according to John.
Glory to you, O Lord.
After he appeared to his followers in Jerusalem, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. And he showed himself in this way. Gathered there together were Simon Peter, Thomas called the Twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples. Simon Peter said to them, "I'm going fishing." They said to him, "We will go with you." They went out, got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach, but the disciples did not know that it was him. He said to them, "Children, you have no fish, have you?" They answered him, "No." He said to them, "Cast the net to the right side of the boat, and you will find some." So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because there were so many fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on some clothes, for he was naked, and jumped into the sea. But the other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the land, only about 100 yards off. When they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. And though there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Now none of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" Because they knew it was Jesus. He came and took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to them, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and to go wherever you wish. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." He said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. After this, he said to him, "Follow me." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Now, before we have our guest speaker come up, I want to share with you just a nugget of Pastor Rick's sermon this morning, because it was too good not to hear, based on the gospel. Though the word forgiveness never appears in this story, it is nevertheless a critical theme. Peter, the ever hot-headed disciple, gave into fear and failed to acknowledge Jesus, failed to stick around for the bitter end. Now Peter is given the opportunity to face his risen Lord and begin again, forgiven, loved, This story offers some of the deepest implications of resurrection for us. We are forgiven. We are invited to start over. We are completely loved. And we have a job to do. This isn't only Peter's story, it's our story too. When fear holds us back, love calls us forward. When we feel trapped by the way things have always been, Jesus invites us to cast our nets on the other side of the boat. Change our perspective in light of the resurrection. So what does this mean for us? Are you held back from the abundant life Jesus promises by guilt, shame, and fear? If you understood yourself to be completely forgiven, completely loved, and completely free, how would that change the choices you make about your work, your money, your relationships? The light of resurrection shining into us invites us to look clearly at how we have made choices out of fear rather than love, and to move away from the fears that bind us. The implications of this story also resonate in our faith communities. Are we making choices about budget and mission based on our fear of failure, our guilt for past failures? Or are we pointed forward with the light of the resurrection on our backs? If we are completely loved, completely forgiven, and completely free, what does that imply about how we are to feed the flock? We are called not only to proclaim God's love known to us in Jesus, but to act on it. That means setting aside fear, the way fear binds us into small lives, and embracing love as the basis of every action we undertake. God's love, set loose in the world of the resurrection, needs our hands and our feet and our hearts to make it concrete in our place and time. Like Peter, we're invited to change our perspective and cast our nets where the love of God is available for us. And there's plenty for everyone. Jesus invites us, come and have breakfast. In the morning light of resurrection, there is no room for guilt or fear. We are forgiven, loved, and free, and we have some sheep to feed. Alleluia, Christ is risen. The Lord is risen indeed.
Amen. Alleluia.
Now I'd like to invite, on that theme of Feed Our Sheep, our guest speaker today, Joe Mancini, who is with the Working Center downtown Kitchener, and he's also part of, he's wears many hats, and one of them is also for St. John's Kitchen, of which you have been very good at collecting your plastic containers to help feed those sheep. I'll pass it over to Joe right now.
Yeah, that's a really fun reading to reflect on the life of the Working Center from the perspective of feed my sheep or tend my sheep. I guess the minister offered a reflection that Brenda read that is very much a personal, you know, what you can do. Response to that beautiful reading, that's kind of at the core of the Easter message. The Working Center is kind of interesting in that it is, in many respects, it is the kind of the social ability to take the gospel and live it in the community, and we did that. In a very specific way. It was back in 1982 that the Working Center was founded in downtown Kitchener on Queen Street with the goal of understanding poverty and unemployment. But we came from our first little grant. I always love to tell people because it represented who we were, and that is it was called Plura. And Plura stood for Presbyterian, Lutheran, United, Roman Catholic, and Anglican, the first initials. And it was a small grant to do grassroots social justice work around poverty and unemployment. And so that was 37 years ago. And my wife and I were at the core of that group back then, and we've continued to be at the center of the Working Center. And, really, if you were to reflect on the Working Center, it's kind of like, when Jesus said to the disciples, go back out there and bring in the fish. And all of a sudden, they had more fish than they knew what to do with. They had more works than they knew what to do with. They had more spirit than they knew what to do with. It was, it was mind-boggling for them. And so the Working Center is very much like that. And so maybe quickly, just so you can see the, what this thing of the Working Center is, I'll do it very quickly. But the Working Center today has over 30 projects. We've actually purchased and renovated 7 or 8 commercial buildings in downtown Kitchener, and we own 5 or 6 multiplex houses. We have over 60 units of housing that we've created, hardly with any government money. This is kind of coming from the bottom up. We have projects like St. John's Kitchen, or Worth a Second Look, the thrift store, or the Green Door clothing boutique store, a 2-acre market garden called the Hacienda Sari Market Garden. There's a bike shop called Recycle Cycles, and 5,000 bikes are fixed in downtown Kitchener. And all these projects are with volunteers, making, you know, doing the work of community. The Job Search Resource Center helps 3,000 people with job searching. This last couple weeks, we've helped 3,000 people do their income tax. And again, these are very practical kinds of things. We have a couple cafes. The Queen Street Commons Cafe is a real community hub in downtown Kitchener, but the food is produced by volunteers in one kitchen and then brought over to the cafe where, you know, 300 guests or 300 customers a day are part of that place. And then there's, you know, we pick up garbage in downtown Kitchener. We do street sweeping in downtown Kitchener. We run a discovery team that does walks in the downtown, and police say there's 50% less calls when the discovery team is on the street walking. So there's all kinds of work, and that doesn't even describe St. John's Kitchen, which I'm going to describe at the end here. But, you know, so it really is this abundance of fish, works, abundance of works that took shape, that happened in a way that is completely surprising. Over 100 people work at the Working Center, 500 volunteers. It's really a beautiful community. It's a beautiful informal kind of intentional community. The people who are part of the Working Center take their work so seriously, both volunteers and workers. And so somehow we've been able to create this intentional community where the work of community, the work of serving our downtown Kitchener really, really takes shape in a beautiful way. So, but I'd like to, you know, how does that happen? Why did that community root itself so well? Well, you know, what was the faith calling that allowed that to happen? And there's a bunch of things that I think are really crucial. And it's the kind of things that churches can learn from. We see ourselves as a church, but on the streets. One of the things that we that's in the middle, in the core of Working Center, is this idea of the virtues. And this comes, it's a long story, which I won't get into, but we have these 6 virtues of the Working Center. 4 of them are things that were just talked about in that little snippet of the sermon. Live simply, serve others, reject status, work as gift. These 4 things, you know, they're all things you can do from the heart. Live simply, serve others, reject status, work as gift. And then from the heart, then you need to go out. And this 5th one is build community. And the 6th virtue for us is something that's kind of odd, that's called create community tools. So, you know, when you hear the Working Center, the bike shops, and open housing, and cafes, and thrift stores, and cleaning streets, and it's the way this work is deployed. We call those projects community tools, and they have a kind of way about them that is about involving people in all the work of serving community. But those main virtues, I think that's partly why those fish The working center has been blessed with so many fish, that we've been able to feed our sheep and look after and tend our sheep, is because we've kind of put those virtues at the core of our community. As part of those virtues, access to tools is so crucial. Like a bike shop where people can fix their bikes, or a space where volunteers can come and help other people do their income tax, or a commercial kitchen like Marita's Kitchen, where people with disabilities and people left out of work and new Canadians come every day. There's 15 people in the morning, 15 people in the afternoon, who are producing meals for the cafe across the street. They're producing meals because they want to be together. They want to do their work together. They want to share their work. So there's this access to tools. It's like creating open spaces where we don't guard the spaces, we open up, and people come in. And that's similar to our open public spaces. The Working Center doesn't build offices. It builds tools, projects that people can be involved in. And the main thing as well is that we're changing the meaning of work. It's pretty bizarre how work is designed in our society. A lot of it is good work, clearly. But what happens when 50% of the people who should be working are not in the labor market? Maybe because of disability, maybe because they don't speak English, maybe there's all kinds of reasons. But previously in our society, we said, well, if you don't work, then we will marginalize you. But maybe it's sometimes we have to think, well, maybe it's the kind of work that doesn't feed people's spirit, that doesn't give them the spirit to put those nets out to gather more fish. And so changing the nature of work for us has been really kind of profound. When we say we have 500 volunteers, many of those people are people left out of the labor market. Our work is during the day. So we're not doing our work at night. We do our work during the day. Well, then, people often who are part of the Working Center aren't, people who are working wouldn't be able to be part of the Working Center, for example. So a lot of the Working Center is a kind of a mission to support those left out of the labor market and to bring them into the work of serving others in a bike shop or in, I'm going to explain St. John's Kitchen right next. They're part of, doing... helping keep things moving at the Employment Resource Center, or the Computer Recycling Shop, or the street sweeping, and all these, or the Market Gardener. We just had an email from our Market Gardeners. And there's two people who they want to be able to pay a little bit because they give so much. And these are two people. One, whose mental health issues, was recently hospitalized for the second time, but so focused on wanting to work. And how much money can we offer as some kind of a stipend over the summer, because he's committed to working. Otherwise he's left out of the labor market. How do we include him? And another woman who, again, she's gotten past her drug addiction. She's the hardest working. She is obsessive compulsive as a worker. If you needed someone to clean your house, you would want this woman. She is so good. But she needs work. And she's a little compulsive, so sometimes it's hard for someone to hire her. But on the other hand, embraced by a community, she is a great worker. And so that's kind of what the life of the Working Center is about. So then there's one other really key part of the Working Center, and that's St. John's Kitchen. And that I haven't talked about it, that's its own thing. It's not its own thing, it's very much part of the Working Center, but it's a place at 97 Victoria that has grown and expanded in the same way. We put out the nets and this thing around St. John's Kitchen that's grown. So, first of all, what it is, there's St. John's Kitchen, there's the Hospitality House. This is just in this neighborhood, this in a, just like right in the block of buildings. St. John's Kitchen, which serves 300 meals every day, we actually produce 400 meals. And that's why you've been collecting these containers, because we often give away food, and we give away so much food that cooked food that it's really great to have containers to put them in. Otherwise, we're buying them. So that's a great little thing that you've been able to help us with, and we really appreciate that. So St. John's Kitchen serves that meal every day, but there's also showers, there's laundry. We built a medical clinic, and by building a medical clinic, a doctor showed up, Dr. Berrigan, and he brought his nurse. And for 10 years, he just retired, he's 75 now, but for 10 years, he worked 30 to 40 hours a week doing primary care at St. John's Kitchen. Through that, we've developed a nurse practitioner role there, which basically the Grand River Hospital gave us a full-time nurse practitioner because of the amount of primary care that's being done right in that clinic. We have three psychiatric outreach nurses, which are very crucial to supporting this group of essentially outcasts, people with mental health issues and drug addictions. Having those three psychiatric nurses on site working with people every day is a great benefit to our downtown. And then there's the hospitality house, which is a house with six people who are acutely ill but homeless. Someone gets their, you can imagine, there's a fellow I saw the other day who had his leg amputated. Where do you go after that if you're homeless? So many people, at least four people have died from that house in the last year. So these are often people kind of on their, they're nearing the end of their earthly journey. But it becomes a deep place of hospitality. That's why we call it hospitality house. And we built there's another house and we bought it, and we built a community dental clinic. And we're trying to, that's one of the harder things. Anyone want to volunteer to be a dentist? we actually need dentists to do that work. And so that's but it's coming. We think we operate at about 20%. Eventually, we'll build it up. And I told this story the other day. A woman, I was giving a talk, or I was having a discussion with a professor at the cafe, and a woman came by, and she's someone who's been part of St. John's Kitchen for a very long time, and she stopped me and she said, this young man, I met him at St. John's Kitchen, and his mouth is so sore. He's infected, and he needs dental work, and he needs help. How can we help him? And she was very confused. This woman has her own mental health issues, but nonetheless, she could feel this man's pain. And what she said is, this is really interesting, what she said is that, I know what it's like to not afford dental care, and I don't know what is it about us that we just take the pain and we let it go through our body and we ignore it. And it was interesting for her to say that. And she was a 74-year-old woman who was reflecting that to me about how she, why this young person wasn't dealing with their tooth pain. It was interesting. But that's the community of the working center. Someone like that caring about someone else and then trying to share that. And so then I told her, well, go make connections with the dental clinic people. See what can be done. And so that's what she did. But the main thing about St. John's Kitchen, almost done. The main thing about St. John's Kitchen is that we serve that meal every day. The core of that meal is that, and this has gone on since 1985, is that we've always thought of St. John's Kitchen as taking surplus food from the community and involving our community, this community of the Working Center, in the work of producing that meal and serving it. So I know that you know what it's like to serve a banquet. I'm sure you know the kind of work, even when you do something downstairs when your church is full, there's a ton of work. Well, St. John's Kitchen is like that every day. And we don't really have that much staffing for that. We rely on our community. We rely on the wider volunteers, for sure. But we also rely on the people of St. John's Kitchen to do that work, to produce the meal, to serve it, to clean it up, and that cleanup is a big job. And so that's gone on for 34 years. It's a beautiful community that it does feed the sheep. It tends to the sheep in a way that's very beautiful. That's about, you know, caring for people and in ways that are kind of different than what our society expects. You know, in 1985, I remember people saying, "Well, people don't need meals. You know, you're just helping them. You're just helping them with their dust. You know, their problem. You know, they should be out there getting a job. They don't need to be fed a meal." But you know, I think our society, you know, what we've realized, our society is leaving out a whack of people who aren't part of the labor market. But we need to build. You know, rather than say, well, leave them alone. No, we need to build community. That's what us Christians are supposed to be doing. We got to figure out, you know, what makes that group tick, that they can serve. And that's what the Working Center has been doing. And that's, you know, when you look at the service of the Working Center, it's mostly those who have been left out, who have translated their skills and abilities in ways that you would never know to serve community. And so that's what we call. That's what we think of as bringing virtues to the life of downtown Kitchener. So thank you for your interest. Thank you for gathering all those plastic containers. You think, what are you going to do with those things? But in fact, I'm sure the ones that have already come are gone. So we'll always take more.